Welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast with your hosts, Richard Hill and Matthew Darlitz.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. My name is Matthew Darlitz, Editor-in-Chief of the Science of Psychotherapy. And as always, I'm here with our Managing Editor, Richard Hill.
Howdy, Matt. Yes, I'm still here. You can't get rid of me. And particularly for this week, this is one that's really taken my imagination. Who have we got with us this week?
We are talking with a wonderful couple, Jeffrey and Amy Ulrich, and they're originally from the United States, but we're going to be talking to them where they're living now in New Zealand. So let me just give you a little bit of a bio here. So Jeffrey is a clinical psychologist who specializes in working with children and families. And so he's graduated from the University of Virginia, and he's completed a fellowship at the Mary Ainsworth Child-Parent Attachment Clinic. So he's had a lot of experience since then in a variety of different settings, including residential treatment, public school systems, community mental health, and private practice. And Amy, she is an author, a human rights activist, and co-author of this wonderful book that we're going to hear about. Richard, tell us about the book.
Yeah, now, this fantastic book, simple title, The Six Needs of Every Child, and subtitled Empowering Parents and Kids Through the Science of Connection. So there's a lot of things. We'll talk about it. There's attachment, there's things, there's all kinds of lovely stuff. Systems theory and all the things that I love. But just reminding people while we've got your attention as they're sitting with bated breath ready to go and talk to Jeffrey and Amy, don't forget that each month now, on the first Friday of each month, we are doing our international mastermind get-togethers. And really, everybody's teaching everybody so much all over the place that it drives you nuts. Where's a place where we can get together as professionals and just talk to each other about the work we're doing, learn from each other, expand? We always have a topic prepared, but we almost always go off and do something else because something really interesting comes up. There every Friday. Check out registering for those on the scienceofpsychotherapy.net in our academy website.
Yes, wonderful. Look forward to connecting with you there. So, Richard, let's hop across to New Zealand and say hi to Jeffrey and Amy. Amy and Jeffrey, welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. It's so great to have you guys here.
Oh, what a pleasure to be here with you. Thank you for having
us. Thanks for having us.
And Richard here, holding the Sydney end of the story up. And we're very excited to have you here so close. I mean, you were saying how nice it is because you're in New Zealand, which is just 2 hours difference. You're excited. We're thrilled.
None of us are sleep deprived to do this interview. It's outstanding.
That's right. Now, we had a little bit of an introduction to, you know, your book, The Six Needs of Every Child. And that's the reason we wanted to get you guys on the show to have a bit of a chat about this book. It fits perfectly with our listeners who are primarily, you know, therapists, and they're people, a lot of them working with kids. Yeah. And so we think this is a marvelous resource for them and for their clients.
And I think it's a pretty marvelous resource for all our therapists and listeners who are parents.
Oh, yes.
Grandparents. This is great for so many people. It's such a broad-ranging thing. And what I love is also the subtitle, which is Empowering Parents and Kids. We always have to say that in things. But through the science of connection.
Mm.
Just music to our ears. Mm. But let's just start with just that generic thing. Just a couple of things. You're Americans in New Zealand. Right. You've written this book. Can you give us just sort of a quick introduction into who you are and how you got into this book and how you ended up in this moment? And we want it in 30 seconds.
I went to university and I wanted to study psychology, and you know, I was having a hard time finding something to connect with, and I found a researcher there who was a student of Mary Ainsworth, and she introduced me to the field of attachment. I just fell in love with that paradigm, that idea of how humans connect with one another and how that affects development. I went on to the University of Virginia and studied with another of Mary's students, one of her very first students at Johns Hopkins, Bob Marvin, and continued that work. And he was instrumental in developing a system for measuring in the strange situation, which you're listeners are probably familiar with attachment with preschoolers. So most people are familiar with the infant system. And he also developed with partners at Tulane and Washington what's called the Circle of Security intervention. And that was developed mainly for at-risk parents, foster care system, and really trying to support them to really move out of those pathways that were in that disorganized, disordered attachment pathway. I love that work. It's pretty intensive, using strange situations to look at relationships. It's hard to access those resources. And so for me as a clinician, I always had this desire and hunger to how do we take this information, which is so helpful for couples, for parents and their children, and make it more accessible broadly. Mm-hmm. And so over the last 10, 15 years, this sort of book was germinating for us. And Amy, she can speak for herself, but as raising three boys, you know, this becomes really real life. And Amy came on board with that. And so we developed an idea of writing the book together.
Right. So Jeffrey and I met when he was in graduate school. And so I feel like we've kind of been studying these concepts together for our whole life together as parents. We've been married for 22 years and we have a 16-year-old, a 14-year-old, and a 9-year-old. And it's been really remarkable to me to see how the science really has spoken into our family life and how when we're able to consider it and think about what the research has to tell us in digestible nuggets, it really can help us connect with our kids, which is so important. And I went through a period in my early years of being a mom that I just had trouble reading any parenting book because I felt so judged and I just felt like I was doing it all wrong. And so our heart was really to find a way to present this material in an accessible, shame-free way, so that parents could enter in, but also, hey, we've all been in, this is hard. I mean, being with our kids sometimes feels so hard, but it's this journey that we're on with them that matters. And there are these ways that we can actually enter into the relationship and not only grow them, but we grow ourselves in the process.
Right. It's really interesting, this thing. It's very much a Western culture, more Western culture than some of the other cultures, but this idea that we're the first ones doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people have been raising kids for quite a while.
Right.
And of course, I'm one of my great interests, anthropology and various things, and looking at primate work and, you know, Jane Goodall and some of the great people in there. And you can see all these similarities. I do remember, just as you're talking, both holding a 3-month-old orangutan. That was kind of exciting. But then playing with 2-year-old orangutans, which was just an experience that has stayed with me and actually informed me about being parenting later, that there are fundamental elements.
Yes.
That seem to go before, even, you know, going back into species before us, you know, back into the strain. And you seem to have done that with this. I know these things, sometimes you look at, you know, the 6 things of that, the 5 things of that, the 4 thing, but actually, to me, this is more like thinking in complex systems of what are the organizing principles?
Yeah.
And you found 6 organizing type of principles, 6 needs that just are very universal. How long did it take you to sort of determine? Did you have like 50 and sort of whittle them down? Or were they really apparent to you? I am curious about how these 6 emerged out of the extraordinary experience you've had.
Yeah. So in my background in attachment, so Bowlby, not many people are aware. People are familiar with the attachment system and that whole idea of safe haven, threat, survival. But Bowlby it was influenced by systems theory, and he actually postulated several systems, the attachment system being one of those, the exploration system being another, the social system being another. And this idea that these instincts, these systems that are hardwired into us through evolution, interact with one another to meet developmental goals. And so the circle of security, which I mentioned earlier, really focuses on the interplay between the exploration system and the attachment system, or what folks call that proximity seeking behaviors. That's how you see it in action. And so this book is really built on, okay, if you look at the exploration system, what's really going on there for a child? And what does that child need from his caregiver to maximize development in that sector, if you will? So exploration is that move out, that secure base from which a child goes out into the world and develops competency in the world. And that's balanced against the need to pull in. We talk about the refuge seeking with this idea of proximity seeking. And what are the needs on that side? And that has to do with the competency of self-emotional self-regulation, which is so important to be able to thrive in the world. So the six needs basically piggyback on those two movements. So the first three needs, delight, support, and boundaries, are really what a child needs to frame that exploration move. And protection, comfort, and equipping, when we talk about equipping, are what frame that move back toward us when our emotions, when we're aroused, we're distressed. And what do we need to get back to that exploration system being turned on? So it's a circle, it's a movement in and out of those two systems, and those needs are embedded in them.
Yeah, this is beautiful. This system's thinking, and like Amy said, you know, we can have just so many instructional books which are very formulaic, and you do ABC and your kids will turn out ABC, and if you don't, then you're a bad parent. And so thinking in systems, I'm wondering if we can break down these six and just give a very brief précis.
Just given that nice sort of, there's two sort of segments of it, that was interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting here as a dutiful student at the moment, please.
Yes. So four on the exploration side, the three needs, delight, support, and boundaries. Delight is probably the one that's most interesting to me. A little background. So there were, Mary had, I think, six original scales. So can we focus on the infant side of attachment? But she was measuring maternal behavior in her field studies as well. Sensitivity is the scale that people are probably most familiar with and is talked about in the research literature as being associated with maternal behavior, parental behavior, and insecure attachment. But there were other things she was measuring. Delight was one of them, loving affection. Then there was several others. But delight, when I came back to look at a coding system with Bob Marvin to pair up with the attachment system, we really utilized those scales and took a look at them. And delight, to our surprise, I really wasn't expecting this. We expected sensitivity to be important for secure attachment. Rejection is certainly one. But delight had the highest correlation to secure attachment of all the scales that we used, which is really interesting because it's not an active behavior. It's an emotional interaction, and it's very subtle.
And one thing that's so exciting to me about this, and we may talk about this more later, but so we have in the book, we have presented the needs as a compass to help people understand the movement and to think about directions to turn to when they're feeling stuck with their kids. But in the book, we say our journey begins with delight because we really do believe that so much of the systems that we build, if we want to build them healthily, have to make space for us to just delight in our kids. And what you mentioned earlier about how people have created, particularly since the 70s, 80s, 90s, these methods and systems of parenting, these checklists and to-do lists. And what I really believe we've done is we've stripped the joy and delight out of just the natural responses that sometimes, this is what I felt my early mothering years, I wanted to wholeheartedly love my son, but I felt like maybe I'm doing something wrong if I don't correct that behavior. Maybe I'm doing something wrong if I don't follow this particular system right now. So I loved Jeffrey's just full on embrace of delight. I think is it if people get anything from the book, delight is the most important thing to us.
So
just as a quick thing, sorry, Jeff, yeah. just as a shout out to one of our other authors and mm-hmm. who we had on who works in trauma. Mm. And delight was one of his central focus. Mm. He talks about the delight in yourself and delight in other people having delight in you. So just a quick shout out, people go back and refer that to again. But the fact, what I love seeing in all kinds of different approaches and all kinds of different perspectives, the same stuff coming out.
Yes.
Yeah. Then I think we're arriving at some kind of central.
That's topic. Right. And delight is, so delight has a pair. Each of the needs on each side, explore and the refuge or proximity seeking side, have a pair. Delight pairs with comfort on the bottom side. And both of those we call the mirroring needs, the ICU needs. And what's key to both of those needs is that there's no movement to control. It's just being present. Now, in exploration, the presence that we have with our children is just, there you are, and I'm discovering who you are in the world. Like, how do you approach things? What are you interested in? That pause, and in a busy world, if nothing else, just having the ability to pause and have curiosity about your child. And this is where technology worries me, because we get bored so easily. Mm-hmm. And we miss that window for delight. Yeah. You know, you go to the park, you watch your kid play. It's boring, but then you have these moments where you get tickled because you're like, oh, look at him doing that. Anyway, that's at the core of delight. It's just being present, it's being aware, and it's taking in without needing to control. Mm-hmm. Now, support is the next thing on that line, because it's our children and that movement exploration. They're mastering things, they're discovering things, and you know things that it would be helpful for them to know. And they need our help to structure their exploration at times. We talk about following our children's lead. So what is it that they need from us to help them be more competent? And that's really at the core of support. And then at the end of that exploration move is boundaries. Boundaries has to do with the fact that, look, you're not the only person in the world. The world has its own set of needs and demands on you. And I have to explain to you how that works. So you can't just grab your toy from your sister, because there's an effect of that that you may not fully understand. And I have to help you understand that. And so we set boundaries on our children. The three on the bottom side, protection. Sometimes, and again, that compass that we use, because these needs flow into each other. So at a certain point, boundaries become an issue of, I need to protect you from other people who are crossing boundaries or things. If you run out into the street, I have to step in. Boundaries and protection, we are paired in that they are taking charge needs. So we have an authority with our children that they need from us, because they're little and they're not mature. So protection is that bit where we see one step ahead where things are going to get dangerous, and we do step in. Or our kids signals, because they're distressed, they're scared, and we hear that cry, as Ainsworth pointed out, and then we make that move in a partnership to pull them in. Comfort's that next move after that, which is you're distressed, but you're safe. And now I have to see that distress and center myself in it with you without trying to make it quickly go away. Mm-hmm. And that's the big challenge for us as parents, for clinicians, when we sit in our office with our clients and there's an uncomfortable emotion. We have ideas in our own mind about what would make it better. Yeah. And we have to resist that temptation to move quickly to the last need, which is equipping, which is, okay, let's start to understand what's going on inside of you. How did we get here? And how might you move out of this distressing or painful space? So those are the six needs.
Right. And I think there's probably a lot of advice and books sort of just on that equipping part, and forget about all of the very relational parts that you've just been describing.
Yeah.
Now, in your practice and, well, personal life and in your practice, how have you seen these things play out, emerge in with clients and in your own life?
I'll go first, and then Amy can talk about family life in particular. I think the biggest move really is that Western thought you were talking about, Richard, that Western idea of individualism. And I have a job and a role, and then you, my child, has a job or a role. And so that's a one-way street. I do to you, and then I follow up on it. Right. And if probably the biggest thing is making that shift to like an us, like we are in a boat together, and we have to find our way forward. I have a life, you have a life. It's not an equal partnership, but it is a partnership. And then how do I navigate a partnership? Well, that's where those needs come in. Where are we at? Where are you at? Where am I at right now? I want to go this way. You want to go that way. And obviously we're butting heads. And so it's, for me, it's getting people to reframe the whole conversation into relationship. And how does a relationship move forward? And that requires, as the adults, you set that tone. You take that lead. All right, son, what are you thinking? What do you need? What's getting in the way for you as a conversation as opposed to something I impose? I provide the structure for that. And it's really lovely to see couples, you know, parents and their children, engage in those kind of collaborative conversations and curiosity together.
Yeah.
Parents are so used to like just having what do I impose on the thing? And then how do I deal with the pushback?
And I think also it's this idea. What I love about what you've said is that like every single parent who has come into your office over the years, and certainly how I feel as a parent, is I want the best for my child. I love my child, even if we're really struggling with each other. But the question that's somehow been put into our minds to ask is, what do I do, right? So people are coming to Jeffrey's office. I'm asking myself in the kitchen with my kid who's having meltdown, what do I do? And so you're looking for an answer. And an answer tends to have a right or a wrong to go along with it. And if someone says, well, now is when you put them in the timeout and now I need to do this, and that doesn't work, well, then I feel like a failure, or I feel like my kid's a failure. Yep. And then that's going to show on my face, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with you? Right? So we're entering into this almost like achievement mindset in our parenting. Am I doing it right? I'm doing it wrong. But if I start, so Jeffrey said that he started to with his clients, change this to a language of needs. What does my child need right now? And then you start to consider your child as a person and as another individual, because these six needs that our kids have are also needs that we have in ourselves. So when we start to consider what a human need might be, then again, I just think it helps us to see them more fully and start to wonder about ourselves and how what they need might trigger us or make us see things that we need to.
Right.
And I like this thing that says, you know, how shall I be with that person?
Someone right.
Yeah. Richard, can I just say just the thing that comes to mind as we're talking about this is the strong cultural milieu that we're in whatever culture. Now, you guys, you've come from the United States, which I would probably consider almost like a hyper individualistic kind of culture. Now you're immersed in another culture, which probably still is sort of Western individualistic, maybe a little less so. I'm not sure what your experience has been. And so when we talk about the universality of, you know, of these concepts, how do you see that in terms of culture? How does this all sit in a cultural frame?
Yeah. Well, one of the things I am struck by, I think Australia, I've read commentators speak about this. You see, in the British Empire countries, this strong pull toward what would, in an attachment language, would be the dismissing, avoidant, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, get it together, pull it together, kind of tendency or move toward. And it's interesting, in the U.S., I think you see actually some diversity because it is a melting pot. You'll get different flavors depending on your audience. But in that Northern European vein, you see a lot of that. And I see a lot of it here with Pakeha, New Zealanders, for sure. It's interesting. I work in community mental health, and I work in under-resourced communities, a lot of Maori, a majority communities, and they have a different context. Theirs is a lot embedded in trauma, and it's more of a survival. It's a lot of traumatic recovery work that you're doing. It's interesting, though, in other, you see this some in the U.S., you get this sort of Southern Mediterranean influence where there's a lot more what we might view as that enmeshed or over-involved emotional pattern. So you see some of that, but much less. So I think the biggest things are just, what is the cultural history for Maori and indigenous communities here? It's a traumatic one. It's generational trauma. I think for, I heard it very interesting. You get a lot of immigrants here and U.S. clinicians. So you get commentary on what it's like to be a clinician coming into the New Zealand context. And a lot of my colleagues have made note of that sort of dismissing tendency. And somebody pointed out, you know, that there was early trauma for first white settlers here as well, in terms of that frontier culture and seeing a lot of pain and just survival on an island in a faraway land, and how that comes through generationally. You deal with it. I just think about, how does this get passed on generationally? And it does. Attachment, we know it. We pass it on. Part of the hope of the book is to say it's not, even though it passes on, it's not written in stone. You can actually take charge of it. But you have to know what
to look for,
what you're working with. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what we hope with the book. We give you here are the options. Here's what you might be missing. It's still going to be hard to move in those directions that your history, your neurology, your interpersonal neurology says, don't go there. But at least you're like, oh, wait a second, that's a human need. So what's getting in the way of me going there?
And I think this is why Matt and I urge everyone to shift from sort of linear causal thinking into this sort of systemic thinking, where it's rather than that those needs, those six elements that you've brought out, are things that you should be causing in them. You say you've got to cause delight and cause support, that they're fundamental underpinnings that will emerge in different ways.
Yeah.
And that then they become functional, but they also become dysfunctional. And I was just looking at those two of them there, boundaries and protection, have kind of got in some Western societies particularly, and certainly in some other, the subcontinent, I can see this, and a few other places, really mixed up. And of course, we've then got this behavior which we've termed helicopter parenting, or now curling, you know, parenting. And they're sort of dysfunctional elements that sometimes emerge out of these needs. Is that something, am I seeing something?
No, you're getting it just right, because it was interesting writing. So when we wrote, how do you measure this in your, like, if you want to start looking at this in yourself, how do I respond to that need? Mm-hmm. It, you know, we tend to think, oh, more is better, right? comfort's a need. I need to start giving more of that.
Yeah, more of these tablets are good.
Yeah, exactly. And it's quite the opposite, except for delight, which is the only one I can look at and say, I'm not sure you can overdo delight. But for each of the other ones, for sure, the challenge is to find yourself in the goal, in some sense, is that good enough parenting. It's like land in the middle, And things will probably work out.
Right.
And so the question is, where do I over-respond? Where do I push too hard? Mm-hmm. And where do I tend to don't want to go there? I under-respond. And that tends to be our patterns. We have tendencies where we want to go too hard, too much in a direction. And those tend to pair with things we're moving away from and trying to avoid, or really just it doesn't come up on our radar because we weren't primed to attend to that need when we were growing up in our first relationship. So you're exactly right. It's helping people say, oh, not more is better for everything. It's like, oh, these needs exist in a balance. And some days, some weeks, some years, there's going to be that need is going to be more ascendant developmentally or whatever. And some other needs are going to be more ascendant at other points in our development. And we move and flow. It's a journey. It's surreptitious. It's not a straight highway. So,
well, this sounds like it's a good place to land this conversation. We've been sort of chatting for about half an hour now. And I think people are getting a really good sense of what this book is all about and this reframing that that you're hoping people will grab hold of. So I just want to thank you guys for being with us. I just give you opportunity. Is there anything that you'd like to sort of leave our listeners with before we wrap up?
One thing I'd like to leave listeners with is we're proud of the book and we're excited at how it could help parents think differently about their relationship with their children without, as Amy was saying, feeling an added burden of, say, I'm messing things up. It's going to generate, for people who engage with it, it's going to generate a lot of thought-provoking questions about your own childhood, about your own needs being met or not met. We developed curriculums to go with the book. And I think for listeners, those are going to be really powerful therapeutic tools. And I encourage folks, with the book, if you purchase the book, you'll have access to the curriculum. And I think the book launches in Australia and New Zealand in August. It's launched in the U.S. this week. But I really encourage parents, if they want to really grow themselves and their relationship, to really take a look at that curriculum, because it's I'm really hopeful that it'll be impactful for folks.
Okay. And Amy, how about the
Well, I think just as a kind of co-laborer in this process, again, just want to underline the hope that this brings a shame-free approach. I've worked with moms and organizations that work with parents, particularly mothers, for years professionally. And I think there is so much power in the work that we do and the way that we raise our kids. And so much of it is just embracing the wholeness of who we are, the good and the bad, and bringing that to the table. And so I just thank you both, too, for the opportunity to be here and share about this work with.
That's lovely. And I've just got one sort of wind up myself, Matt, because what I see, and I knew it before even talking to you and the brief things I'd looked at, there's a framework here for life. Sure, this is, you're looking at parents looking after kids. I'm seeing for therapists, this is a fabulous way to deal with clients. Exactly what you were saying. They come in, we say, what are we going to do? And then we do something, and then it doesn't, is the client bad? Am I bad? This co-created
experience. We're all failures.
Yeah. In that linear world, risk it every time. Yeah. And I've written extensively about this myself, so I'm really, attuned to what you're saying. But, Bonnie Badenoch and Alan Shore and Dan Siegel and a whole bunch of people are talking this co-created experience, this co-regulation, this beautiful thing if you're saying we're in the boat together.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There's a bit of me, there's a bit of you, there's a bit of our, I just can't really verbalize the warmth that I'm feeling about the broadness that this applies to. And I'm just become a grandfather, my little granddaughter's over three. This applies to me too. Yeah. That experience. It's fabulous. Fabulous. I just want to thank you so much for putting this down on paper so we can do it. And those excerpts of the curriculum, that's great, to return ourselves to something that works.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Wonderful. Jeffrey, Amy, thank you so much for joining us here on the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. It's been wonderful.
Oh, we've loved it.
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, see you later.
Bye.
Oh, Matt, I really enjoyed that.
Yes.
I love the book and things. Gosh, they were so nice.
Yeah.
As human beings. I mean, really gentle and kind. And so I think our humanity permeates our writing. And I think a lot of writers nowadays, especially in our field,
We've been talking to a few, and Dr. Ollie, I mean, he was, all these really interesting people, and they're so delightful. Delight, that's the word.
Anyway. That's right, delightful. Jeffrey said this phrase, language of needs. I love that. I mean, This is all about this language of needs, and to be able to reframe our approach to not only kids, but to each other.
How do we engage with these needs and allow these needs to be noticed by what emerges, so our behaviors are the symptoms. And yeah, it's really good. I want to have a look. I haven't had a look at depth at the programs, the training things. So I'm really interested in looking at what they do there.
All right, fantastic. All right, well, thanks everyone for joining us. Make sure you jump onto the landing page for this podcast, and we'll give you all the links to Jeffrey and Amy's website and the book and all.
Yeah, I'll try and get something for the magazine too. Which
that would be wonderful. Yeah. Yes, if we could have them in the magazine, that would be great.
Yeah, I do try. I have to arm wrestle people, but we'll see what we can do.
All right. Yeah. Richard, it's been a delight.
It has been a delight. As again, we're just delighting all over the world.
We are.
I love it.
All right. Thanks everyone for joining us here on the Science of Psychotherapy podcast, and we will catch you next week.
Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. For more great science, go to thescienceofpsychotherapy.com.